open our informal discussion. I would move approval of the agenda. We can't approve the minutes, so we'll have two approvals the next time. These are the minutes of the executive committee, not just minutes of your meeting, but we'll approve those the next time we meet as a full quorum of committee. And we'll move to the information item, which is our quarterly session with the AAC leadership.
And here he is.
And here he is. Fresh from reappointment, right. 4 more years, 3 more years, whatever it is.
4 more years.
Yeah.
Maybe, we'll see.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So the couple of things that I wanted to talk about that the first responder. First responder, thank you. Okay. First responders. I think that the exercise that we did was very valuable to the first responders. I think the education that they received, particularly from working with people from the AAC, was good. I think moving forward, two things. One, we want to make sure the deaf community, the communication with the deaf community is going to be, make sure we focus on that going forward so that whatever we're going to do is going to be effective communication for them. Secondly, from where I'm sitting, particularly since my wife has a service animal, being able to make sure that we have service animals in that kind of scenario, I think is going to be important. One of the interesting things, at least that I see, is that we know it's a drill, but the service animal doesn't. So I think that's an interesting thing to look at. So there's our education of the first responders, WMATA personnel, and everything that we heard on that was good. I mean, we a lot of good suggestions. I think it was well coordinated, all that kind of stuff. What we're also here, and we know that we want to do like, I think, 11 within the next year. What we also heard on the committee was that particularly the disabled community would like to participate from a different end. They want to know what they can do, so they need to be educated in the drill. And so we've got that ask from the disability community and probably from the general riding public, so that when they see an incident like that, they know what their options are. So it's kind of twofold. So I thought that, and particularly making sure that we know which group we're talking to when, I think is important. I know that, and I don't know if the RAC, I know that when we discuss this with the RAC, the other thing that I think is real critical is the, from the telecommunications side, making sure that the phones, your cell phones, iPhones, whatever, within the tunnels are going to be working.
We had a conversation on that because of the contractual issue, but we talked about it in the executive session.
Right.
As a way forward.
Good.
On that. It's not going to be tomorrow, but a way forward that will get tunnel by tunnel lit up over the next couple of years.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. It won't be all in one day, but it would be work that we can do to accelerate the carriers getting.
Great. And then, and for even touching back to disabled community, that's going to be the key way that they're going to get their information from their phones, relay or whether it's video relay service or something.
I had the experience yesterday coming from Capital South to Vienna, and quickly at every station that we got to, which was 5 minutes between each one, saying, can I get enough time on the system to figure out what's going on. Took a couple of stations, but by that time I could see it's going to be bad all the way to East Falls Church.
Right.
Can I ask you a question? And you have indicated that you all participated in the training, and that you'd like to add the disability, and the RAC, and I think that's a really good point because it sets the environment for what's there, So do we all have the capacity to help each other to see what the environment's going to be like in an incident when you're with a service dog or with a person?
Drill, but I did the Silver Line drill last summer.
Well, actually, a training video that will be made available to the different organizations. Again, Doris Ray will always bring up the point, Chris. Doris can neither hear nor see. And so, we've talked about having the EMT people have placards that are accessible either RISE lettering or Braille, so that when they come into an emergency, someone who is blind and can hear, you have some way that they can see what's going on.
So you almost have two focus groups. You have, as we did the original one, where we were helping to educate the first responders. That's key, because they indicated they learned a lot. And the staging area, they learned a lot. That's great, so that we can help educate that group. But then the second group, which, and I don't know, I'm sure we're looking at it, the second group is the community at large, who is the group that wants to be educated. And so that's going to be a much, that could be a much larger group or more diverse group or whatever, but, you know, you, at least we, that's what we, I hear, that's what the committee hears, is that I'm a member of the public, and I want to know how, what's going to happen X when it's Y happens, or something like that.
We actually had a member of the public come in when we were getting ready for the first exercise saying, I'd like to volunteer for this, because she thought they were training us as to what to do as opposed to the first responders.
Right, yeah.
I know we had these conversations last year and earlier this year with Iraq, trying to come up with a broad-based education plan.
Because you pointed out the sign that's signage that's currently in there really isn't adequate for the disability community as to, you know, well, what do you do?
So the other two things.
We also, are now into a training program with Metro employees in terms of if they may be riding on the trains, what can they offer to help in
that's
an emergency
good.
Situation? So we're trying to learn.
The other, and I'll just jump to my other two things quick, and I think, Christian, you'll probably jump in on one of them. The education dealing with the emergency buttons, when to push them, let them go, talk, and then push them again. My question, and I just don't really know the answer, so I guess this is sort of onboard training on the trains. Is it a different push-to-talk set up on the 7,000 as it is on the 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 series? I don't know. I haven't ridden a 7,000, but I think that would be great.
They're pretty much the same. You push it in order to talk and release it in order to listen. But the instructions are the initial push when you have a sick passenger or a problem is you push it and then let go so that the train driver can talk to you. And then when you respond to them, you push it to talk. But the first one is a call, and then after that, each time you want to talk. And you need to say over or, you know.
Kind of like
whatever. The other problem, as you know, is they're in different locations. They're either right by the center door or they're at the end doors.
But the 7,000.
You can't see them from the middle seats. You just don't know where they are.
Yeah, the 7,000, though, is good. Because I think you have them right by the handicapped seats. I think they're more, you've got them on either end of the car, but you've also got them more towards the handicapped seats. The other point I wanted, the alternatives to paratransit systems, and I know we've looked at the cab services like they're being offered in D.C. now, I think Virginia. My short story is yesterday afternoon, because I deal with 508 at Department of Veterans Affairs, I've been pulled into a paratransit, enterprise paratransit system for veterans with the VA. And so since I've been doing this for, 25 years or whatever, they've asked, because I direct 508 at VA, they've asked me to make sure the new system is 508 compliant. But I was able to get on with the vendor who's supplying the system and ask them all kinds of questions regarding their technology and adding new people on and this and that and the other. I got a chance to show off. Unfortunately, there was nobody there in my office to hear me. Yeah, that was a shame. But the cool thing is, and before we go to Christian, maybe to give an update on this, is that there's so much that I've learned about paratransit, the systems, add-ons, notification of individuals in real time, and all that kind of stuff that's just... it's nice to be able to take some of the knowledge over to the Department of Veterans Affairs and put it towards a medical model where veterans will be using an enterprise paratransit system to get to their to their appointments. And it'll be interesting for me to come back, look at that system, and then harass Mr. Kent with, if they can do this, why can't we do that type of thing? Anyway, which is one of my favorite pastimes. But Christian?
Well, actually, before Christian, one of the things Star has just put on last week is they will text you the taxi number and when it's going to arrive. They have will call, which we don't have.
That's good.
For airports and trains so that they don't have to wait around. And once you call Central, they say, if you don't hear from them in 15 minutes, you know, call us back. But then you get a text once they've assigned a taxi. So you know it's your taxi because if you're at the airport, there are a lot of red tops there or whatever. They say, red top 113 is yours and we'll be there. And
saw that in Chicago a couple of weeks ago.
And it's brand new. It was just this week's the first time I've seen it used.
So one of the things, one of the services that just works so well that for the disabled community right now is Uber. That between what you see on the screen as far as accessibility, the way it's set up, the efficiency of it, interesting to be able to rate the driver. Interesting that the driver can rate the passenger at the same time and have it go by as an enterprise system. I mean,
I recall reading the one of the op-ed columnists in the New York Times this week who said, as you get out of the Uber cab, you're supposed to say 5 for 5 because she was having trouble getting picked up because she wasn't getting a good enough rating. The conversation is 5 for 5.
Okay. So, Christian, I don't know if you wanted to chat.
I'm happy to chime in on this, on paratransit alternatives. You know, this subject is expanding because we started with Mr. Sheehan's original request to create something for Metro Access that was like NextBus. Mm-hmm. So a customer, instead of having to call the call center and wait in a queue for someone to answer the phone and then say, hold on a minute, let me call the driver and find out where your driver is. The future world is you pick up your smartphone, you're able to pull up your own reservation, see and confirm what the pickup window assigned was, and even find out what the ETA of your vehicle is to your location. The technology to put the app together is out there already. The technology to communicate with customers' smartphones is already available. And certainly the technology to communicate with an old-style cell phone is out there. You can send a text message to a customer through SMS very easily. Those pieces are there. The reason why Metro Access doesn't have this yet, as I described, is because if we were to roll it out right now, I mean, for one thing, we would have to buy an accessory from Trapeze, but that's not really the obstacle. It's the quality of the ETA information. If we said, okay, you know, tell me when my van is going to get here, the only capability that we have right now is that it would look into our reservation system, and it would let the reservation system estimate when the vehicle is coming. The reservation system reckons distances by triangulation. It does not have live traffic data in it like other services that you see. Like you pull up Google Maps and you see the roads that are red. That's where there's a traffic jam and things of that nature. When we can incorporate live traffic data into our data sets, then the ETAs would be accurate. Otherwise, we'd put out information that would be kind of more of a guesstimate, and then we'd have a lot of negative feedback saying, gosh, this app doesn't work. So what we've been doing in cooperation with Trapeze is we've been opening discussions with both Google and TomTom to try to get these traffic data sets made available to Metro Access. So that's currently in the works. But, you know, that will be helpful for people who are going to be using Metro Access. But interestingly enough, parallel to that effort is what we're seeing in services like Uber and Lyft, that a paratransit customer could decide independently, well, yes, I have the right to use Metro Access, but maybe I want to travel today. I don't want to make an advance reservation. And I want to be like everybody else and pick up my smartphone and arrange an Uber trip. And as long as the fare is affordable, you know, having that same-day service that comes when you want it with minimal delay, I mean, who wouldn't like that convenience?
So we are not opposed to seeing Uber and Lyft kind of come into our territory. In fact, it'd be great, as provided that the customers are able to go directly to them without coming through WMATA. Because
but,
if they,
but you would still envision some subsidy support for that ride.
Right.
Yeah, so it'd be an arrangement, triangular arrangement,
yeah.
The rider, Uber, and Metro Access.
Well, the jurisdiction.
Or
yeah.
The jurisdiction.
The jurisdiction knows who is paratransit eligible, and the jurisdiction could, instead of aiming that money at the WMATA subsidy, create a separate program like the DC taxi service that's in place now.
Definitely worth exploring.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things also that have to be negotiated is what do you do with Uber's surge pricing?
Right.
I understand the day that we had the meltdown on the Blue Orange Silver Line, they were charging $80 to get people in from Reston.
Yeah, Uber would have to.
Yeah, right.
Uber would have to choose differently if they're going to serve the disability community. Yeah. I think that it'd have to be mitigated in some way. But they have approached other markets. I mean, they went to San Francisco and very aggressively tried to get into paratransit. But I have to say, you know, I smiled a little bit because I love when people think that paratransit is simple. And they start off, oh, well, we're going to come in and do this. And they went in there, and when they found out how complex it was, they thought, well, you know, perhaps not. So, you know, I think we're, you know, the discussions with them are going to have to continue.
Well, we know they're also trying to improve their image with the public.
That's right. Absolutely.
And they, I think we had, excuse me.
Sure.
Mrs. Hudgens, you might know that we had a discussion with the Uber people in Government Center. We invited them to come on our Fairfax Area Disability Services Board, and I invited them to talk. And they are not only interested in servicing disabled people, they also want to modify their vehicles to have ramp systems and other things, tie downs and all that thing to follow the Metro Access policy that you have to give them safety.
Yeah.
On their transportation. That's a good public image that they want to keep it, yeah. Not all of them, but they'll have some vehicles that are available, like we have red top taxis and yellow top taxis.
Same way
as, yeah. Similar. So that would be a great concept if we could subsidize the fare.
And they discovered, just like DC Taxi did, that we still have 70% of the customer base is ambulatory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the original problem statement was, what are we going to do if we don't have enough accessible vehicles? And then we say, well, wait a second, but the majority of this business doesn't require a fully accessible vehicle. So if they were able to siphon off an awful lot of this demand and offer greater convenience, that's a win-win. So we are exploring that with certainly to expand the DC pilot. You know, the DC pilot's doing very well.
Ridership-wise and otherwise?
It's been going up every month. It's about halfway to the original ridership goal that was set for it, but every month it's going up by leaps and bounds because the interest, once people find out about it, especially, you know, the dialysis customers were our first target, but the district has said, well, gosh, you know, we want to give our taxis more business, so they've been opening it to broader and broader audiences. So we think that that's a really great model. The ones in Maryland also. I mean, we've been running one in Montgomery County now for almost 2 years that's been very successful. Unfortunately, it's slated for termination at the end of this fiscal year because there's not a program to move it into permanently. So it's sort of, in our view, a concept that's been proven, that's worked well, but it has not yet, we've not yet been able to get it to an institutionalized form. So in the meantime, MDOT started another one. So, I mean, you know, this time it's in Prince George's County with the ARC of Prince George's. I think the concept is advancing. The problem, though, is that each one of these is a one-off. So what we want to do, and this kind of leads to the sustainability study that you asked us to do, that's going to be delivered to the board next month. We're going to at least transmit it and then, you know, give you all an opportunity to let us know when we'll engage further with you about it. But that study talks about continuing to do these types of things, but looking for ways to regionalize it because of the fact that, I mean, each jurisdiction has a slightly different set of resources. There are different methods to put these things in place. We've been very fortunate that the AAC has been so supportive of this because they view this as increasing customer choice. And I think, you know, as long as they've told us, as long as you make it clear to people that Metro Access eligible customers can always come back to Metro Access if they need it, then fine. You know, let them know about the other options. So that, and you know, I think the last part is one of the things that you'll see in the report, and I mentioned it in our presentation in March, is that we have all this data that shows which Metro Access customers can use bus and rail and other services, but we don't tell them that they have to. We just say, okay, well, we have an understanding. We're going to write that in your file, but where I think we want to go is we want to be able to tell a paratransit customer, if you have reserved a paratransit trip at a time or for a location that we've already established that you could use bus or rail, we're going to encourage you to do that. And we don't yet have those conversations because the paratransit reservation system isn't set up to do that yet, but it will. So, I mean, really, I think that before we start actually having those conversations with the customer, we want to make sure that we have an array of alternatives to point them to so that when we do have that conversation, the customer views this as to their benefit. We don't want it to come across as something being taken away. We're actually really trying to show that, you know, things like same-day service, and just even like as Dr. Posner mentioned, you know, the will call arrangement. There are some places that you go, you don't know when you want to go home. And if you have the ability to just say, well, you know, just be ready to take, I'll let you know, you know, that's wonderful. It's worked great for dialysis because dialysis patients don't know when they're going to come off the machine. That's worked very well. There are going to be other scenarios like that these paratransit alternatives could become very popular. So, thank you.
One of the things that you do for
encourage our good conversation when you're back with that report, but particularly stress that innovation is really a place where we could put more effort. Probably win-win situations, better service, lower cost, greater reliability.
You know, one thing you do for Patrick's question, even though you don't know the exact amount of time it will take to get there, biggest problem with the waits are we're not allowed to use the word add-ons, but transferred rides. And if when they call about where's my ride, and you can say, well, you're the next pickup or we have one other pickup before you, then you sort of have an idea of what's happening and where they are. I know whenever I get on, I always ask, how many more pickups before I get home? And they'll tell me I'm second, I'm third, I'm first, or whatever. And then you.
I always know when I get in the airport shuttle, I will always be the last. But
well, same. But I can count to all the hotels. It's always your hotel is the last hotel, which is terrible. I think the thing that I had wanted to talk to you about was the 7000 series, since we now have the second one is coming on next week.
It's number two.
One of the comments we got on our free ride for the inauguration was from one of our members, and we had originally negotiated with the engineers as one of the items that we wanted was to have the armrests on the first row of seats by the priority seating. And the reason being, all the other seats, there's something on the back to get up. There's a way to get in or out. And on those, there are a lot of people with very weak musculature. And they needed one to get down because they lean on that and fall into the seat and they need to have to get up. And I was very surprised when we went on the 7000 because I expected those to be there. They weren't there.
And you had asked for them.
And well, not only had we asked for them, they had told us it was in. What had happened was, and I gave Mr. Blake the history, we actually worked with three different engineering groups. And I sent Mr. Blake a copy of the emails and the names of all the people that we worked with. And somewhere between the first engineer who agreed to it said it's definitely going to be on there, and the second engineer said fine, and the third engineer it disappeared. And so since we have more 7,000 series cars coming, I don't know what the cost would be, but I can't imagine on a $50 million car that adding armrests on two seats is going to bust the system. And I think that's really important for elderly people, not just disabled people. They really need to hold on to stuff.
Oh, I agree.
And it's also very difficult to reach out and pull yourself up. It's easier to push yourself up. So that was one of the things on the 7,000. And the other one that ad nauseum is, again, having a priority seating at the center doors underneath the call for emergency and opening the doors. I know on the 5,000 series, when they took out the birdcage, as I used to call it, the poles, they were able to change the configuration and take out those center seats and make those parking spaces. And on those models, they do have empty space at the end of the cars. I know Tappan always goes to the end of the car and then he parks in that little spot between the driver's cabinet and that other set of seats. So I think, again, I don't have a number, but I'm sure staff can get a number of what it would cost to move those priority seats. And that really is a safety issue. Because that does get really crowded just during rush hour. And all the wheelchair folks that are there tell you, you're tired of being handrails. Because they lean on them. They're a piece of furniture.
Yeah.
So those are my two little bits on the 7,000.
Christian, can you take this issue to Rob Troop? I've raised it once about 3 months ago. I have not gotten that answer on the, and to Jim Doherty, on the safety issue of the parking, but also the issue of the armrest. Give us a board memo as to what's the feasibility and what's the cost on both of those. I said, no promises.
Yes, sir, we can do that.
I'm happy to fly to Japan and negotiate it. But
sure, I mean, we know everything has a cost. And,
right.
You know, and just off the top of my head, knowing the cost of the entire car and having seen them, what they've done.
Not enough.
But if indeed the armrests were promised, that's something to
It's unfortunate because there was a lot of dialogue on it. And, of course, you know, we reminded Phil and company that, you know, he got like 19 out of 20 of his recommendations, the committee's recommendations.
One of the 19.
And that's what we're hearing. I think that's a good way to go back to the engineering group and get both things to kind of look at cost and feasibility.
Particularly to the location of the parking. And is it a problem for everybody? Have the wheelchairs parked in front of the call box.
Sure.
That's an issue.
Okay.
One more point that I'd like to add on this paratransit service. I just saw in the newspaper that Washington has given permission to have these three wheels scooter type. They call it tac-tac or something like that. You see them in the developing countries. They call it becak in Indonesia, Philippines, and Manila, and in another country around there.
They don't have it. Is full of them.
Yeah. They take transportation. Passenger sits there, and it's like a motorcycle built-in house behind it, and it's very, very cheap. And people who cannot afford to take taxis or even metro access, they could pay very, they have a meter, which is very, it runs in a very low fuel cost and everything. So I'm just thinking that if we could negotiate, if this is coming, it's going to be more. Eventually it will come. And Virginia could think of, Fairfax County could think of getting 50, 60, or 100 permit to bring those tac-tac, which is three-wheeler taxi, actually. It's a motorcycle taxi if you want to transfer that. And they're very reasonable. Now, with a wheelchair, you cannot go in there. But people with other problems, disability problems, they can easily go there just like taking a taxi, normal taxi. And what it will happen, it will help people to go to grocery store.
Yeah, just to be able to get out.
You know, to get out to go to movie or go to church, nearby places, short distance. And they're very, very easy and comfortable.
Are they easily stored?
I beg your pardon?
Are they easily stored? That is it?
Oh, yeah. They could be stored in a parking lot, you know, anywhere. You know, you could, on a roof. You don't need a garage for that. No. You know, it's not as big as a car, but it has two seats on the back, and one sits for the driver and one next to the driver. Now, some of them might have three seats. It's like a golf cart, actually.
Yeah.
It is a golf cart concept, but drives with gasoline and oil.
But how safe are they in a collision?
What's that?
They don't have airbags.
Well, I don't know. They're going to use it in Washington, D.C. I saw it. Tac-Tac, they call it.
Tappan, what is the application of this, though, that you think would be useful?
For people who are disabled, instead of can't afford to pay the metro access or cannot afford to pay the Uber, so they could have a cheap transportation by short distance, not going on a long distance, going, you know, doctor's appointment in their neighborhood, go to church or go to grocery store or drugstore, things like that.
And there's a company that would operate this
service
independently?
Yes, exactly.
So it sounds almost like an accessible jitney. That's
exactly right, jeepney type. Yeah, but it's only like private. It is not a jeepney you're talking about, right?
A jitney.
Yeah,
yes.
Jeepney in the Manila, you see that.
Right.
But that's like a bus. They've got 10, 12 passengers. This is, you can have your own personal.
Yeah, it would be individualized.
Individualized,
we'll see.
Yes.
I think that is supportive of what we've been talking about, the idea that there's going to be a whole array.
Yeah. Yes.
Of options for people,
keep
you know.
That in mind, that will be very, very. I think it's a great idea.
I mean, considering all the work that we're doing too. I mean, on livable communities and you know the goals that the board has on really facilitating mobility. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. Not every solution has to be a metro service.
Right.
Certainly not metro access,
yeah.
But it doesn't have to be a metro
that's
service either. So. And it facilitates, you know, I think more independence, which is another goal that we're trying to accomplish. So I agree. I think that we should be pointing people at all these options.
I have a question. Yes. Thinking back on metro access alternatives, how do we move forward, particularly in the state of Maryland, with making sure that the cab alternatives, like the one in Montgomery County that's ending, how can we go in there and ensure that some of those are funded, utilized by the state of Maryland? Because the funding is different, I guess, for Maryland than it is for, let's say, D.C. or Virginia. Because it's funded by the state, correct? The paratransit.
Those pilots started when Metro staff met with State of Maryland's Coordinating Committee on Human Service Transportation. There was an executive order from the governor some years before that. I want to say that I think it was Ehrlich or before. Was it Glendenning? I mean, it's been a while, but there was an executive order that said leverage the alternatives. So the state coordinating committee had come together and started looking for ways to coordinate human service options as a way to offset the fact that everything was headed toward paratransit. So the pilots were born of those discussions. Now, MDOT has been very supportive of the research. I think that they have they've had an opportunity to see the complexion of ridership that we have, the types of organizations that are part of the constituency. But I think if we were to ask the MDOT leadership where they are on this, they believe that they're in an evaluation stage still. I mean, these are pilots, and there are a lot of things they're looking at. They're looking at cost. They're looking at sustainability. But I think the biggest concern they have, you know, if I can speak for them, is that it's one thing to show a proof of concept in a controlled environment with a pilot. And it's another thing to say, now let's make this an institutionalized, regionalized, you know, programmatized service that would require ongoing funding. And would this model fit the various types of agencies that, that we would be reaching out to coordinate? And we understand the concern. I think we want to continue having those discussions with all the jurisdictions. And the fact that they've started a second pilot, you know, to me is a sign that there's still great interest. But at the same time, though, it's easy for us to tell them, oh, sure, you should do this, but they're the ones that have to look at, you know, how would this go from a pilot to a program? How would it be sustained? And, you know, also they have concerns, too, about the way that it would work from a procurement standpoint, that in the pilot, the Human Service Agency was selected to subcontract with one transportation provider. If this were to become a program, then they'd say, okay, well, so what's the criteria for choosing which human service agencies participate? What's the mechanism for choosing the transportation provider that would actually do the work? And what's the funding source? Right now, these pilots are coming out of the Secretary's grant. So, I mean, I think they'd be looking at that and saying, all right, well, then, you know, how do you do this going forward? So they have a lot of questions that need to be answered.
I just checked on the tuk-tuk. It's an electric vehicle. They just opened an agreement in Denver to build them, the factory, and Denver has licensed them to operate on the street. So it actually has some reality.
You see the picture
of that? Yeah, I've got a picture right here.
What's their horsepower and speed?
It's an electric. It is a almost
a golf cart.
Well, what's the other one?
That's the question about horsepower and speed, because a lot of those things, like the small Chevrolet Duke, aren't allowed in this country. They're not safe on the highway.
Well, it looks just like, and I'm trying to think of the name of the car,
Mini Metro.
I just say they have licensed them in Denver.
Yeah.
Although they consider it to be a high quality service for yuppies.
But that's it. They just want something to get point A, point B.
That's right.
So I had one question, I guess, for you. I know we're ending this fiscal year, like we start FY16 July. We've got, as we report, you know, lighting, bus stops, I know we've Metro Access, fixed route, all that. Is there anything that we're missing that you would want us to focus on in FY16 that we aren't hitting that you would like more additional information on?
I like the innovation as clearly something we should.
WMATA
is not among the great innovators. But if we can build a kind of an innovation laboratory inside the agency, we might even be able to spread it to others.
I do want to stick up for us, Mr. Downey, just to say that when
I said the big WMATA.
Well, that's what we want to stipulate, because when we go out there and take our show on the road at APTA, where paratransit is concerned, we've been all over the place.
I think more of these innovations that are using technology to a better delivery.
Yeah, well, and what happens is when you...
One thing that I mentioned today was the escalators. One of the things that has happened with escalators, some of the other improvements on the surface, I found that jurisdictionally the contracts are usually signed and have to get approved and go through a lot of paperwork. And quite frequently what happens is the demolition occurs quickly.
And then the permits get stuck.
Exactly.
That's what happens.
And, I pointed particularly at the elected officials to see if there's something that they could do to hasten things. And I know Mary's very good in Arlington, and you're very good in Fairfax,
I'm
and maybe
sure
Jack
can
Evans can
that.
Be very
I...
good. But whether there's a little bit of policy pressure from the local boards to sort of make communication a little better between WMATA. Because it is frustrating.
In TPB last couple weeks ago, it was weeks ago, we talked about that when they were talking about going out on walkability.
Mm-hmm.
So so just like you say, the sidewalk gets stuck in a particular jurisdiction, and if it's near the station why should they have to spend, you know, weeks when they're ready to pour and it's not there. And I really think that's one good place to do it, because that's where we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're going to go out to the jurisdictions to try and make all of this accessibility. And that's where you can do it.
Planet Metro piece a couple of weeks ago that Shyam and his people put together, but it's with the half mile radius around each station is exactly the same.
Right.
The accessibility within that is remarkably different. And then they did
that's the one that they presented. Yeah.
And then they said if you make some very small changes in the pedestrian network, you can change the number of people who are accessible to the station. And then
I never use those brand new jet elevators that we put in at Ross Lynn because it's impossible to get to them.
You can't get to them.
I take the circulator, which drops me off when I'm going to Georgetown.
Oh, and you could really,
And there's no way to get there. Yeah. I mean, I have to walk past it and then come back to it and then get over, and it's easier to just go in the station.
That is a challenge. But I do think that because we're partnering with the jurisdictions on this, looking, I guess work with them in terms of the numbers of places we need to go. The permitting needs to be coordinated into that. It's we have it with all aspects of it. You know, name it.
Along with, I don't want to wait 26 minutes. I'm going to ride Metro Access this weekend because I don't want to wait 26 minutes between trains. I won't. I'll ride Star this weekend.
You realize that you just signed up for our conditional eligibility enforcement pilot, right? Okay.
So,
I'm choosing paratransit because of convenience.
I discussed this with the attorney about this, and my conditional eligibility has to do with distance and time because of my fatigue factor. And as long as Metro is going to make me fatigued over distance.
You knew that was coming, Christian.
Multiple transfers in time. Yeah. So when I go to the FDA and I have to, again, take orange to red because we don't have a transfer facility at Silver Spring now, and I have to walk a half mile uphill and wait 30 minutes for the bus to travel 20 minutes to get there. That's where my conditional eligibility started.
Right. Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
It was just.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're talking about.
Right. And I talked to Frank.
I said, fill in all these gaps.
I never used Metro Access before because I said I don't need it. And then I said, well, what if I only met, 10 trips a year?
That's why we keep Phil, because he's shy about all of this, right?
I think we lost the chair.
Thank you very much.
I moved. That's what I wanted to make a motion. I want to make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. We appreciate you.